Old Man Winter is struck this past week. Yeah. I don't know if the Pastor Art had anything in mind when he had me speak after the snow struck. And I hope that since I am the old man of the three speakers, you're not going to hold that against me. My testimony is not that much different from others. I had Christian parents, and I was raised in a Christian family, and I was taught everything that I needed to know. But being a young man, I had to find my way, and I had to, you know, find out what I was and who I was and what I believed and so on and so forth. Making mistakes along the way and learning from them, I hope. And the process, of course, still continues for today. My grandfather, he settled down in the Burdett area, so I am a farmer at heart. Yay. I could tell, yay. That was about 100 years ago. Actually, it was probably just about 100 years ago right now. And he farmed there until his death, and then my father took over the farm, and when I was about age 4, he moved us to Calgary, where he took up principal of the Calgary Prophetic Bible Institute, which was started by William Eberhardt and Kramer Manning. And when those two moved up to Edmonton and took basically leave of Calgary, am I on that one or this one? Ah, there we are. When they moved to Edmonton, and boy, I'm loud now, aren't I? When they moved to Edmonton, my father basically continued in Calgary, and he taught the Sunday morning Bible class, which was aired on CFCN, until the prophetic was sold, in the late 1950s, to make room for downtown development. So we had moved to a farm just north of Chestermere Lake at about grade 4. It was about grade 4 for me. And so I became a farm boy once again. And pretty much most of my public schooling was in the public system, except for 1 year. Because I was under age 16 and couldn't drive, they sent me to Prairie. And I got my grade 11 there. Then came back to Calgary and got my grade 12 and graduated. After graduation, I attended Berean Bible College and graduated in 1966. Then went to SAIT in 1969. I graduated, met my wife before I went to SAIT, and she was willing to hold on for 3 years for me to graduate. And then we were married in September of 1969. We have two wonderful sons, middle-aged, at least 30, in their 30s. When my oldest son has blessed us with two grandchildren, a grandson and a granddaughter, and my younger son is getting married in December in Cancun, and so my wife and I are going down there for 1 week of sun. Yay! Back in, after I graduated from SAIT, I worked in the electronics industry pretty much until now. I got a degree in broadcast technology, and of course that didn't mean I was going to be working in radio stations or television stations. Fact is, the opposite may remain true. I pretty much have covered a whole broad spectrum in the electronics industry. And in 2003, I was forced into retirement, being an old man. And nobody wanted to hire a guy over 50, probably a guy pushing 60 at that point. 3 years ago, my wife and I decided to get out of Dodge. At least that's what I referred to Northeast Calgary. Gunslingers and all, bang, 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 shootings and all that stuff. And the pressure basically got to us. And we started looking around and found Clairsville. Yeah, yay. It was wonderful coming down here and meeting all of the new people and making friends and everything else back here. And it was the best decision that my wife and I have ever made. Over the years, I have served in ministerial duties. I was youth minister for 2 summers up in Bethany Baptist Church in Red Deer. And then I taught Sunday school for many, many years, mostly at Grace Baptist Church in Calgary, starting with elementary school and working my way up through junior high, senior high, college and career, and sometimes even the odd adult Sunday school class I taught. So I can't remember how many years I was teaching, but it was a lot. I have preached? Yeah, I have preached at some evening services. But this is my first kick at the cat at morning services, and I got a 2-for-1 deal here. And so I'm really thankful for that. I'm getting my indoctrination at preaching in Sunday morning at this location. Shortly after I agreed to speak this morning, my wife received an email from a girlfriend of hers, and it had an attachment called Twinkies and Root Beer. And I want to read it to you. A little boy wanted to meet God. He knew it was a long trip to where God lived, so he packed his suitcase with Twinkies and a 6-pack of root beer, and he started his journey. When he had gone about 3 blocks, he met an elderly man. The man was sitting in the park just feeding some pigeons. The boy sat down to next to him and opened his suitcase. And he was about to take a drink from his root beer when he noticed the man looked hungry. So he offered him a Twinkie. The man gratefully accepted it and smiled at the boy. And his smile was so pleasant that the boy wanted to see it again. So he offered him a root beer. Again, the man smiled at him. The boy was delighted. They sat there all afternoon, eating and smiling, and never said a word. As it grew dark, the boy realized how tired he was, and he got up to leave. But before he had gone more than a few steps, he turned around and ran back to the man and gave him a big hug. And the man gave him the biggest smile ever. When the boy opened the door to his home, a short time later, his mother was surprised by the look of joy on his face. And she asked him, "What did you do today that made you so happy?" He replied, "I had lunch with God." But before his mother could respond, he added, "You know what? God's got the most beautiful smile I've ever seen." Meanwhile, the elderly gentleman also returned, radiant with joy, returned home. And his son was stunned by the look of peace on his face. And he asked, "Dad, what did you do today that made you so happy?" He replied, "I ate Twinkies in the park with God." However, before his son responded, he added, "You know, he's much younger than I expected." Hebrews 13:1-2 say, "Let brotherly love continue, and be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." The passage I just read came up in a conversation I had with a Catholic padre in a Canadian military camp in Bosnia, Thomas Lovegrad, Bosnia, in 2002. I was serving with the forces over there at that point as a civilian. And I was attending the service that was held, and the subject was brought up by the padre when he asked if we'd ever seen an angel. And the consensus of opinion by some of those in the group, I think there was 5 of us that was there, was that they had never seen one, but they would believe it if it could be proven. Mind you, one girl had had some dreams, but she hadn't seen one. So, I ask you, have you ever seen an angel? Look around you. Is there an angel amongst us? No, I don't think so. Most of them are your friends and your neighbors, and you recognize them on sight. But if you go outside the doors and have a stranger come by and you meet them, maybe? I don't know. Matthew 25, 35, 36, and 40, which we had read to us, said, "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." And the king will reply, "Truly, I tell you, whatsoever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." What have we done for one of the least of these brothers and sisters? 1 Peter 2, 9 and 10 say that we are a chosen generation and a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. We are his children. And in God's personal view, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, he sees us and he is watching. Consider the grace that he has bestowed upon us by sacrificing his son for our salvation. We, in simple gratitude, should accept that. But not just accept it, but out of gratefulness of heart, we should see what we can do for others. Mercy and compassion are two of the characteristics of God's nature. We have obtained mercy, and as a matter of fact, we are commanded to demonstrate those attitudes for and unto others. Is that an easy thing to do? Nah. I, for one, find that at many times I fall short of that. So I am preaching to myself, first and foremost. I come up with all sorts of excuses. I don't have time. That needs somebody else's special touch. I just don't have the strength to do it. And as I get older, and you can relate to this, we don't usually have the strength that we did in our youth. Does that person look trustworthy? Or would I be in jeopardy of suffering harm at their hands? Excuses. They all seem to be valid at the time. Or do they? Zechariah 7:9 say, "This is what the Lord Almighty says, administer true justice, show mercy and compassion to one another." And Colossians 3:12-14 says, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience." That's a tough order. "Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity." What does the world do when it comes to offering mercy and compassion and charity to those in need? We have seen disastrous events in the not-too-distant past and are occurring even as recently as a few days ago. Disastrous events come in the form of natural events, which occur, weather in the form of tsunamis, tornadoes, monsoons, floods, volcanic eruptions and fires, and the list goes on and on. They can cause bodily injury as well as create famines. And then there are the events triggered by human influences, such as wars, acts of terrorism, and the failure of man-made devices, such as pipelines, which can rupture, and perhaps that is a threat to the United States, and that's why they are boycotting the pipeline that we are planning on shipping down there. Or meltdown of nuclear reactors, which happened in Japan. I have seen the ravages of war, been face to face with the survivors, and have heard the stories firsthand of the kinds of devastation it has brought on them, and it changed the way I viewed war. For me, before 2000, I was pretty much insensitive to news reports of war. But being there gave me a whole new realization of the personal impact that it has upon people's lives. James 4, 1 and 2 say, "From whence come wars and fightings amongst you? Come they not hence even of your lust that war in your members? Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight and war and yet ye have not, because ye ask not." It became clear to me, hatred and greed are the motivating factors for almost all human confrontations. And my heart broke seeing the lives of the people torn apart by the effects of war. And then to realize that I was virtually powerless to help out. It just was devastating to me. So how does the world in general react to these? In the case of war, nations will send in their military troops to either slow down or stop the fighting. But they do nothing to change the hearts of the people. And as soon as they're gone, they will get at it again. When the other events, the natural events, occur, charitable organizations step up to the plate and call for donations. Oh, I won't go into some of the charities which have top-end expenses that come first, or the countries' governments that are on the receiving end that use some of the funds to serve their own purposes. But, for the most part, the charities which have the most effectiveness are the ones sponsored by the Christian Church. And the example that they follow is that of emulating God's compassion and mercy based upon the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross. The dictionary defines compassion as to suffer together with. It is a virtue and embodies the essence of empathy and sympathy. And it is regarded as part of love itself. It is foundational to the highest principles. Compassion causes a desire, an act of desire, to alleviate another's suffering. Mercy. It's defined as price paid or wages. It refers to benevolence, forgiveness, and kindness, performing acts of mercy as part of a religious belief characterized in giving of alms, care for the sick, and works of mercy. Sound familiar? We read it this morning. In legal context, mercy may refer to a compassionate behavior on the part of those in power, as an example, a judge giving mercy shown towards a convict. After the tsunami struck in the Indian Ocean, the comment was made that the Christian world stepped up to give relief, and other religions were conspicuous by their absence. We must not give ourselves a pat on the back or think more highly of ourselves than this. It's what God expects us to do. We are supposed to, out of thankfulness, show that compassion and mercy to others. 4 weeks ago, we celebrated Thanksgiving. And we are expected to be thankful to God every day of the week. Is that easy to do? I think it is in some cases. We are so blessed in this country by the things that we have. And we should be thankful all the time for that. But what does this tell us of the general thinking of the rest of the world? Can it be that they are so consumed with their own agendas that they cannot be bothered to reach out to others to give help? Mark 8:36 and 37 say, "For what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world but lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" Sadly enough, that verse describes the objectives for most of the world's thinking and attitudes. The worldly definition of success is to be famous, find happiness and pleasure, or strive to become powerful and wealthy for the purpose of wielding influence upon others. Selfish goals. There are self-interest groups as well that subscribes to seemingly altruistic values. Big word? Altruistic, yes. But that means higher values. Greenpeace is one. And then there are the animal rights activists that, you know, say animals should not be killed. Fact is, don't hurt a blade of grass. And of course, then there are proponents of human rights and the human rights activists. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't condemn them for the for their thinking. Fact is, the basic premise that they build upon is one that is outlined in Scripture. We are to be good stewards of the world that the God has given us. And so we should not be destructive of the environment. We should not go around killing animals just for the sake of wanton killing. And we should not treat others as lesser than ourselves. But these groups put these objectives as their gods and expect all to bow down to it. That's nothing new. In Daniel's time, that was what they did. And self-interest groups lobbied together to get the government to enact legislation to force people to bow down and worship their goals. I pray this can't be said of us in this type of day and age. But minority groups are always lobbying the government to get legislation to have other people go their way. So then how are we to behave? I do not believe that we are to be concerned at all about these events. We are to be true towards the standards that God has set for us. Look around you again and to your circle of friends and acquaintances. Has someone expressed a need that we can fulfill? "For I was hungry, you gave me something to eat." Is someone out of work and needing food? "I was just thirsty and you gave me something to drink." How many people do we see working up a sweat and you could give them just a glass of water and then go one step further and offer to help them? "I was a stranger and you invited me in." Have you walked up to someone you don't know, shaken their hand and introduced yourself? This can lead to some long-lasting and wealthy relationships. Bam! Some of you in here, I have had the privilege of shaking your hand and getting to know you a little bit better. And boy, I think I personally am rewarded by your by the knowledge of who you are and what you are and what you do. "I needed clothes and you clothed me." You have something in your closet that needs to go to someone else? "I was sick and you looked after me." Yeah. Hospital's just over here, across the street. I was in prison, you came to visit me. Now, is someone unable to get out and they need a visit? There are all kinds of prisons. These are the things that are outlined in the scripture passage that was read today. In this church, we have had endless opportunities to support missions, sponsor children, build infrastructure in camps and elsewhere around the world. Are we aware of the situations that we can take and give opportunity to put, you know, our 2 cents in, our dollars in, our time, our effort? We need to become more aware of these situations, and I need to become more aware of the situations as well, and the opportunities that are presented, to become more sensitive to the role that I can take. We have read that we are commanded to show the characteristics of God to others. But what about our motives and attitudes? Motives and attitudes come from within. Motives are foundational for who we are. They come from the heart and are looked upon by our Father in heaven. In Hebrews 4:12, it says that He alone judges the thoughts and intents of our heart. And of course, we can have motives that serve selfish purposes. But the true motives should come out of a thankful heart because of the gift of salvation that we have received. Attitude. It's the visible result of motive. It cannot be separated. We cannot be resentful for having to put ourselves out just to help somebody else, nor self-righteous for having done so. With a motive that conforms to what God expects, attitude will be displayed in form of joyfulness, compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. Verse that I read a while back. 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether ye therefore eat or drink, or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. And my prayer is that whatever I do, it may be done in a spirit that conforms to the will of God. Neither out of selfishness, nor for personal glory, and that I will instinctively be aware at all times for the mercy and compassion shown me by God. May that be your prayer also. Boy, it's 10 after that the clock is on the back is right. So I want to leave you with the following passage. Psalms 103. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless His holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all His benefits, who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercies, who satisfieth thy mouth with good things, so that thy youth is renewed like the eagles. The Lord executes righteousness and judgment for all that are oppressed. He made known His ways unto Moses, His acts unto the children of Israel. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and plenteous in mercy. He will not always chide, neither will He keep His anger forever. He has not dealt with us after our sins, nor rewarded us according to our iniquities. For as the heaven is high above the earth, so great is His mercy toward them that fear Him. As far as the east is from the west, so far hath He removed our transgressions from us. Like a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear Him. For He knoweth our frame. He remembereth that we are dust. For as for man, his days are as grass, As the flower of the field, so he flourisheth. For the wind passeth over it, and it is gone. And the place thereof shall know no more. But the mercy of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting upon them that fear him. And his righteousness unto the children's children. To such as keep his covenant, and to those that remember his commandments to do them. The Lord hath prepared his throne in heaven, and his kingdom ruleth over all. Bless the Lord, ye angels that excel in strength, that do his commandments, hearkening unto the voice of his word. Bless ye the Lord, all ye his hosts, ye ministers of his, that do his pleasure. Bless the Lord, all his works in all places of his domain. Bless the Lord, O my soul. Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord makes his face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace.